the classroom is half full, not because the lessons are canceled, but because several girls have stayed home. They are not sick. They are not lazy. They are managing their periods without supplies, privacy, or support. This is what researchers call period poverty, and it continues to cut into education, health, and dignity worldwide. From rural schools without toilets to city shelters with no steady access to pads, the problem surfaces across settings. Stigma adds a second weight, silence. Many young people feel shame instead of support and miss class, work, or public life to avoid embarrassment. Reports from the United Nations and public health groups show the scale is vast. Yet funding, policy, and facilities still lag. The question is not whether the need is real. It is why, in 2025, basic menstrual health remains treated as optional instead of essential. Chapter 1, Setup and Stakes. At 7:45 a.m., March 3, 2025, a bell rang across the low concrete buildings of Riverside Primary. The school sat behind a chain-link fence and a field of sunburned grass. Class began at 8. The morning line should have wrapped twice across the yard. It did not. A teacher counted and wrote the number in a small ledger. She closed the book without comment. Inside Classroom 4, sunlight pushed through louvers and lit a chalkboard that still held yesterday's math. 12 desks were filled. 5 remained empty. The teacher, Ms. Ellis, took attendance. She did not ask where the missing girls were. She already knew. The same pattern repeated during the first week of each month. She kept spare pads in her desk, bought from her own salary, and handed them out discreetly when students returned. The school had 2 toilets for more than 300 students. Doors did not latch. Water pressure failed twice a week. There was no bin for used pads. A handwritten sign above the sink read, "Wash your hands." The soap dispenser was dry. When the principal sent maintenance requests to the district office, replies came in careful language about budgets and timelines. Repairs never arrived before term ended. This is period poverty, as it looks on an ordinary morning. It touched supplies, water, privacy, and time. It was not only a problem of cost. It was also a problem of space and design. The girls who stayed home were not absent because they wished to be. They were absent because the bathrooms did not protect them from shame. The choice felt simple when the bell rang. Stay home and be safe. Or come to school and risk a stain on a skirt and the sound of laughter. At 9:12 a.m., the nurse's office door opened. A student arrived with a sweater tied around her waist. She spoke softly. She asked for a pad. The nurse gave her 2 and a plastic bag. She also offered a small speech on how bodies work and how nothing was wrong. The student nodded. She put the bag in her backpack, waited for the bell, and slipped back to class. Across town, a shelter opened its doors at 9. A woman named Lila stepped in and signed the ledger. She worked night shifts at a warehouse and slept here when a friend's couch was full. She asked the intake desk for a hygiene kit. The volunteer shook her head. Toothpaste and soap were available. Pads were gone and would not be restocked until the next donation drive. The volunteer handed over 2 folded squares of toilet paper and said she was sorry. Lila went to the restroom and tried to plan her day. She needed to reach work by 5. She had no money until Friday. She would wear 2 layers of underwear and walk carefully to avoid leaks. She would say nothing at check-in. She would try not to think about how often this exact moment arrived. At 10:30 a.m., a county council meeting heard a briefing on facilities. The slide deck moved quickly. It used neutral words. It listed the number of schools without working sinks and the number of buildings without bins. It mentioned absenteeism in general terms. It did not say period. It did not say shame. A council member asked how much it would cost to fix the worst sites. The answer was a range that filled a single line on a single slide. The chair moved to the next agenda item. The room agreed to study the issue in the next quarter. Researchers had a name for what linked these scenes. They called it period poverty. The term covered the lack of affordable products. It also covered the lack of water, safe toilets, and disposal options. It included social stigma that made open conversation risky. Studies connected this to missed class days, missed shifts, and lost pay. Health workers added infection risk when people used unsafe substitutes. They also described the mental load of managing an ordinary biological process under stress. In many communities, the subject remained hard to name. Adults lowered their voices or shifted topics. Boys learned jokes before they learned facts. girls learned to hide trash in sleeves. Some schools placed bins in hallways instead of stalls. Some had no bins at all. A teacher in a nearby district kept a cardboard box under her desk and wrote spare notebooks on the lid to avoid questions. She refilled the box each month out of pocket. She did not track how many students used it. She did not wish to build a list that could be leaked or mocked. At 11:18 a.m., a delivery truck stopped at a small clinic near the market. Two cartons of menstrual cups and three cases of pads were carried to a storage room. A nurse signed the form. She smiled and said the timing was good. Distribution days drew a line of women and teens down the hallway. Some had questions about safety and cleaning. The clinic held short talks on boiling water and proper fit. After each session, the nurse handed out a contact card for follow-up. She also wrote the next class date on a small whiteboard in the waiting area. People took photos of the board and stepped outside into the bright heat. Not all settings had that small relief. In a camp on the edge of the city, water ran 2 hours a day. Latrines sat 50 yards from the tents. The path had poor light. Women and girls organized to go in pairs. They tried to avoid the dusk hour. They placed stones against the door when latches failed. They burned used cloths at night to reduce odor and attention. Aid workers requested more supplies. They also asked for lighting and better locks. The requests sat in a queue with many others. By noon, Riverside Primary's lunch break began. Students crowded the yard. A group of girls sat on a step near the library. They laughed at a teacher's small dog, which visited most days. One girl, using the name A, kept her back against the wall and drank water she did not want. She counted the hours until the final bell. She had one pad left from the nurse. She worried it would not be enough. She did not want to ask to go home early. She did not want to explain why. She had tried to tell her mother last term that the bathrooms felt unsafe. Her mother nodded and said she understood. Money was tight. Work shifts were fixed. The school was the school they had. The question for this investigation sat in plain view. If the need was known and the harm was documented, why did basic menstrual needs remain unmet in schools, shelters, and camps? The answers would not be simple. They would include budgets and plumbing. They would include culture and language. They would include the invisible labor of teachers and nurses and volunteers who tried, alone, to fill gaps. But the first step was to record the absence itself. The missing bins. The broken locks. The empty shelf where pads should be. The laughter that acted as a wall. At 2:06 p.m., the principal met a parent at the gate. The parent spoke about grades and homework. The principal listened and shook her head. She said the teachers were doing their best. She said attendance told a deeper story. She did not use the word period. She said facilities. She said dignity. The parent nodded and looked past her at the buildings. He promised to come to the next meeting. He did not write the date down. By 3 p.m., the final bell rang. A. waited for the crowd to thin, then walked to the restroom. She checked a mirror that was polished aluminum and hard to read. She adjusted her skirt and exhaled. She left the building and walked toward the gate. She would be back tomorrow if she could. If supplies ran out, she would not. Each choice held a cost. Each cost accumulated in silence. After dismissal, Ms. Ellis opened her desk. She counted what remained in the drawer. Three pads lay flat in a zip bag. She wrote a note to herself to stop at the store. She knew she could not keep doing this each month. She also knew she would. She closed the drawer and turned off the light. The stakes were now set. Education turned on the presence of small, ordinary items and the privacy of a door that closed. Work turned on the ability to manage a cycle without fear. Health turned on clean water and safe disposal. Dignity turned on whether a person could move through their day without hiding. The facts were not distant. They sat in classrooms, shelters, and camps that could be counted and mapped. The question that would guide the next steps was straightforward and hard. Who decides which needs are essential? And when will that decision reach the girls who waited behind broken doors? Chapter 2. Escalation and Reversal. At 8:02 a.m., April 9, 2025, a district warehouse opened its roll-up door on the edge of town. Stacks of brown cartons reached shoulder height. A new shipment had arrived the previous week. The labels read Hygiene Student. Inside were toothbrushes, small soaps, and travel deodorants. There were no menstrual pads. The purchasing officer, Mr. Patel, checked the order sheet. Pads were listed on the request. They did not appear on the delivery list. He marked a box that said backordered and sent an email with a simple line: need revised ETA. 2 hours later, a reply came from a vendor desk. The message said the pads would arrive next month. The vendor also asked if the district would accept a brand switch at a small discount. Mr. Patel looked at the calendar and counted school days. He declined the switch because the brand in stock had no individual wrapping. He knew many schools did not have bins inside stalls. Students needed to carry a spare in a pocket without drawing attention. He closed the email and logged the delay. The district's facilities director, Ms. Rios, kept a spreadsheet that tracked bathroom repairs and supplies. She added a column 2 years ago titled Menstrual. It listed bins, locks, and water outages. She used it to make the case for small changes that paid off. A bin with a lid inside each stall. A lock that worked. A line item for pad purchases that sat outside teacher donations. She brought the sheet to every budget talk. She learned which words kept the room calm. She also learned that calm words slowed action. At 10:15 a.m., a reporter met a student named M, who had shared attendance records under a pseudonym. The records showed a narrow pattern. Absences for girls in grades 6 and 7 spiked in a 5-day window each month. The spike was not even. It rose at schools without private disposal. It fell at schools that had added bins and stalls. It rose again when water outages lasted more than 1 day. M did not speak in numbers. She spoke about carrying a sweater, skipping lab days, and sitting near doors. She said none of this showed up in official discipline logs because no rule was broken. She said the system simply counted her as not present. Across the river, a factory shift began at 7 a.m. The restroom near the assembly line had 6 stalls. None had bins. A sign on the wall said, "Do not flush any product." Women wrapped pads in toilet paper and carried them to a trash can near the sinks. The can was often full by noon. Two workers, Kira and Alina, described how they planned breaks. They waited for the loudest part of the cycle when the line masked footsteps. They brought their own supplies and often brought extra for friends. They avoided supervisors who watched the clock. They said the company handbook made no reference to menstrual needs. When asked if they had raised the issue, they nodded. They said a supervisor told them the stalls had no room for bins and that janitorial costs would rise. The supervisor did not respond to a follow-up call. A company spokesperson later wrote that the firm met state codes and provided equal facilities. The statement did not mention disposal. At 12:40 p.m., a community health worker named Tasha led a session in a library meeting room. She set out cloth pads, disposable pads, and 2 menstrual cups. She explained care routines in plain language. She answered questions about pain, flow, and cleaning. A mother asked about her daughter's school and where to throw things away. Tasha shrugged and said it depended on the building. She said some schools put small bins in stalls. She said others left a single bin by the door. She said change often came after one teacher took it on as a personal mission. She did not call this a policy. Midway through the session, a volunteer arrived with 3 cases of donated products. The boxes held only tampons. Tasha thanked the volunteer and moved the cases to the side. She said the donation was kind. She also said many girls at nearby schools did not use tampons for cultural, comfort, or safety reasons. She would try to swap the cases with a partner group for pads. She phoned the partner. The partner said they had a similar stack. The room went quiet for a beat. This was a small reversal. Supplies had arrived. They did not match need. At 2:05 p.m., a state health department analyst pulled a fresh data extract. The table listed school absence rates by grade and month for the last 5 years. The analyst filtered by buildings flagged for water outages and by those that had reported repairs to stall doors. A clear pattern emerged. Where water reliability improved and locks were fixed, absence variance by gender narrowed. The analyst wrote a short note and attached the chart to a policy brief. The brief recommended 3 actions. Fund a pad line at the district level. Add bins to stalls and include them in janitorial contracts. Track water and lock up time as a facility performance metric. The brief used neutral terms and no photos. It went out to a list of 80 officials and board members. 5 replied with thanks. 2 asked about cost. 1 asked if any state had made products free in all public schools. The analyst sent a list of places that had. The analyst did not receive a second round of questions. In the late afternoon, an activist group held a small press event on the courthouse steps. The group was led by a teacher named Joy and a nurse named Amara. They held a poster that read Attendance, Dignity, Health. They spoke for 12 minutes. They asked the county to fund free pads and to add bins with lids to every stall in public buildings. They asked the school board to train staff on shame-free language. A local official came out after the event and said he agreed in spirit. He said the board would study options in the fall. Joy smiled and handed him a folder with a list of the 10 schools in greatest need. She asked him to visit one before the month ended. He said his calendar was full until summer. At 5:22 p.m., a camp on the city edge held its evening coordination call. The water schedule remained 2 hours in the morning and 1 hour at night. The WASH team leader reported that locks had been repaired on 3 latrine doors. He also reported that disposal pits were near capacity. A request for more liners had been filed with headquarters. The supply unit asked for a cost code. The team leader did not have one. The request stalled. A protection officer noted that women continued to walk in pairs to latrines after dark. She asked for more lights. The request moved to a separate list. The call closed at 5:59 p.m. with no immediate changes. On the same evening, a school board subcommittee met in a windowless room. The agenda listed facilities update. A consultant presented cost scenarios. Scenario 1 added bins to all stalls and set a monthly service schedule. Scenario 2 funded free pads in nurses' offices. Scenario 3 combined both steps and added a pilot for restroom upgrades at 10 sites. A board member asked if any of this was required by law. The consultant said no. The board member asked if any grant funding could offset costs. The consultant said yes, but the deadlines were near. The subcommittee agreed to send the item to the full board. It did not set a date. An interview turn shifted the frame the next morning. A custodian named Ray met the reporter at a high school before students arrived. He wore gloves and carried a small bin with a lid. He said he had added it to a stall on his own. He said he emptied it twice a day and used heavy bags to control odor. He said he had asked his manager for more bins and had been told to wait for a policy. He opened his locker and showed a case of pads he had bought himself. He said he placed a few in the nurse's office each week. He said he did not want credit. He wanted a line on a work order and bins that did not come out of his pay. He looked at the clock and went back to work. At 11:03 a.m., a city health commission held a hearing on public restroom access. Speakers covered hand washing, needle disposal, and hours of operation. A doctor named Celine testified on menstrual health. She said that privacy, disposal, and product access formed a basic triad. She cited studies that tied these factors to school attendance, worker retention, and mental load. She also said that adoption of menstrual cups worked best when consistent water and cleaning guidance were present. A commissioner asked if cups could save money. The doctor said they could, but only when disposal and cleaning were solved together. A lobbyist for a budget group asked if a free pad policy would create dependency. The doctor paused. She said that menstruation was not an optional behavior. The room grew quiet. A second reversal arrived that afternoon from the vendor who had delayed the district's order. The vendor offered a quick partial shipment of panty liners instead of pads. The email said this could close the gap. Ms. Rios declined. She had field notes from school nurses. Liners did not meet the need on heavy days. A swap would create the appearance of supply without function. She held for the original order and called a second vendor to split future contracts to reduce risk. The legal office said mixed contracts added complexity. She said absenteeism already had a cost. A cultural leader named Farida hosted a circle at a community center at 6 p.m. She invited mothers, aunts, and teen girls. She began with a short story about her own school days. She described how she had tied a sweater around her waist and kept a plastic bag in her book cover. She then opened the floor. One older woman said the topic did not belong in public. A younger woman said silence had not helped her daughter. A teen asked if she could use a cup at school. The room talked through cleaning, fear, and choice. Farida ended with a simple commitment. She would meet with the school principal and ask for bins in every stall. She would carry photos of what that looked like and a short cost list. She asked for 2 volunteers to join her. 3 hands went up. By midweek, a small detail shifted the frame again. A city procurement officer discovered that the janitorial contract for several buildings did not include removal of menstrual waste from stall bins. The contract listed only general trash and recycling. This meant that even if bins were installed, no one was obligated to empty them. The officer wrote an amendment and sent it to the contractor. The contractor asked for a fee increase. The officer sent the request to the council finance chair. The chair asked if it could wait until the next cycle. The officer did not answer. She added an internal note that said the bin is only real when someone is paid to lift the lid. A data insight arrived from a small nonprofit that tracked school climate. They had piloted a simple approach at 6 sites. Each site received sealed pad dispensers inside 2 restrooms and stall bins with lids. Custodians were paid a small stipend to service the bins daily. Teachers received a 1-page guide with neutral language for requests. Absences in the targeted grades dropped in the next 3 months. Reports of restroom anxiety in student surveys fell by a third. The nonprofit did not claim causation beyond those sites. They offered the template and costs to any district that asked. 2 districts reached out within a week. One planned to adopt the model in the fall. The other asked for grant language to copy and paste. An interview with a school board member closed the week. She said the topic arrived at every election season and then faded. She said no one wanted to debate the details of bathrooms on television. She said the board would move faster with a direct signal from voters that menstrual dignity was a baseline service. She stopped and chose the next words with care. She said it should not take a campaign to put a bin in a stall. Across these scenes, 3 barriers repeated. The first was supply risk. Orders slipped and swaps offered optics without function. The second was infrastructure and service. Locks, water, and bins needed funding and a line in a contract that named who emptied what and when. The third was culture. People avoided the word. Meetings moved to the next slide. Donations missed the mark when they did not match what users would actually use. A reversal cut through the final pages of notes. In one school that had added bins and stocked pads, a rumor started that students were abusing the supplies for crafts. A parent meeting grew tense. A teacher brought the usage log. She showed counts that matched attendance patterns. She showed the drop in nurse visits for headaches that masked cramps. The room cooled. The principal said the school would keep the bins and the pads. A parent who had grumbled earlier walked up and offered to fund a second dispenser. The rumor died in the same week it rose. By month's end, the district received the delayed shipment. Mr. Patel sent cases to nurses' offices and a few to counselors who had asked. Ms. Rios installed bins in 3 pilot schools and filed the contract amendment to pay for service. The activist group secured a meeting with the board chair. The camp received a pallet of liners and a promise of more lights. The factory added a single bin to the women's restroom near the line. Workers said it helped, but they still had to carry waste from stalls without bins across the room. The spokesperson sent another statement and said the company would review. The investigation had turned up proof in small parts. It had also shown where efforts broke in transit. Policy nodded at need. Procurement nudged orders along. Culture kept speech soft. Meanwhile, the ledger of absences and the quiet work of custodians and nurses carried most of the weight. Chapter 3. Resolution and Aftermath. At 7:30 a.m., May 27, 2025, Riverside Primary unlocked its front gate. A maintenance cart rattled across the yard. 2 new metal bins with tight lids waited inside each girl's stall. A laminated card on the back of each door read, in case of need, visit the nurse. The words were plain. The font was large. A service ticket lay on the custodian's clipboard. It named who would empty which bins and at what hour. It named a backup when shifts changed. For the first time, the work sat in writing instead of on one person's conscience. By 8:10 a.m., the nurse logged her first dispenser refill. She wrote the count and the time. She did not write names. The principal stood in the hall and watched the morning line form. Attendance ticked up by 3 students in the 2 grades that had carried the heaviest absences. A small number on a screen is not proof by itself. It is a direction to keep measuring. The district rolled out a 3-part fix over 12 pilot sites. The first part funded pads at the building level so teachers would not carry the cost. The second part installed stall bins with lids and added them to the janitorial contract with a service line. The third part put locks and water uptime on the same dashboard as fire extinguishers and custodial routes. Each item had a person attached to it. Each person had a schedule. The dashboard did not solve culture. It did make the invisible visible. At 9:45 a.m., Ms. Rios briefed the board on early trends. She did not use dramatic terms. She showed a chart of restrooms brought to basic standard. She showed water uptime by week. She showed pad dispenser refills and bin service logs. She showed absence variance for the two targeted grades before and after installation. The lines moved in the right direction where items were in place and serviced. A board member asked about cost per building. She answered with round figures and a range. She said the unit costs were modest when compared with the cost of lost school days and the time nurses spent managing emergencies. A vote set aside funds to extend the pilot by the first day of the next term. At 11:20 a.m., the factory near the river received a visit from a safety officer. The officer walked the floor and stepped into the women's restroom. The bin near the sinks had a lid. The stalls did not. The officer asked the plant manager to add stall bins with lids and to add service to the janitorial scope. The manager nodded and said he would review. The officer cited the firm's own stated goal to reduce avoidable hazards and to raise retention among women on the line. He added a simple note to the report. Installation of bins inside stalls reduces carry distance for menstrual waste and reduces spillage risk. The manager called the contractor after lunch. The contractor sent a quote by 3 in the afternoon. The bins were installed 1 week later. Workers said it removed a stress they carried every month. The company later reported a small drop in unscheduled short breaks and a small rise in shift completion for the cohort that had reported restroom anxiety. At noon, a camp coordination meeting recorded 2 wins. A donor funded solar lights along the path to the latrines. A shipment of pads arrived with clear instructions for distribution and disposal. The wash team placed new bins with lids inside the women's stalls and trained staff on service. The protection officer noted a decline in reports of harassment on the path after dark. The health worker logged fewer skin infections related to makeshift materials. The wins were partial. Water still ran only a few hours a day. Cleaning guidance for menstrual cups still clashed with the water schedule. The team chose to stick with pads at the site until water improved. At 2 p.m., a city health commission voted to add menstrual disposal and product access to its baseline public restroom standard. The standard set 3 checks. Place a bin with a lid in every stall. Stock a dispenser or maintain a service counter for free pads in at least 1 restroom per floor. Post plain language guidance that named menstruation without euphemism. The commission asked the procurement office to modify janitorial contracts and to track service as a performance metric. The vote did not create a new law. It did create a rule set that could be audited and funded. 2 weeks later, an outside evaluation team began site visits at the 12 pilot schools. The team carried clipboards and a short script. They checked whether stall bins were present and clean. They checked dispenser stock. They checked door locks and water flow. They asked 3 questions at each school. Do students know where to go if they need supplies? Do staff use neutral language when a student asks for help? Does anyone pay out of pocket to fill gaps? The team logged answers and left brief notes with principals. They promised a public report in the new term. By late June, Joy and Amara stood before the board again. They had brought parents, teachers, and 2 students who wished to speak without being filmed. The students described what had changed. One said she stopped tying a sweater around her waist. The other said she no longer sat near the door. Joy asked the board to formalize the pilot into policy and to publish the maintenance lines in plain view. Amara asked to add a short training module for nurses, counselors, and custodians. The board voted yes on the first item and set a date to review the second. Not every fix landed cleanly. One middle school installed bins, but placed them behind the toilet instead of beside it. Students found them hard to reach. A custodian pointed this out. The bins were moved the next week. Another school stocked only liners in its dispensers. Students reported that the supplies did not meet need on heavy flow days. The nurse raised the issue and the order was corrected. A high school received tampons only and saw low pickup because many students did not use them. The principal shifted to a mixed supply. The lesson was steady. Match supply to use. Place bins within reach. Put service on a schedule. Ask users what works and change course when it does not. Policy examples from elsewhere provided a map. One national jurisdiction adopted free period products in public institutions and published a simple toolkit that covered placement, service, and language. Another country removed taxes on pads and funded school distribution. a state in the region required schools to provide free menstrual products in restrooms used by students. Each example shared three features: clear responsibility for restocking, a named budget line, a way to check whether the change reached the stall. Money questions did not disappear. A finance chair asked whether donations could carry the bulk of supply. The data from pilots said no. Donations ebbed. Needs did not. A mixed model worked best. Community drives filled gaps and reached shelters and small clinics. Baseline supply for schools and public buildings came from public funds. A cost table showed that the yearly price per student was low when bought in bulk and delivered through the same channels used for soap and paper. The chair approved a small reserve to buffer backorders and vendor delays. The procurement office split contracts so a single vendor hiccup would not empty shelves. Language changed slowly. A training session for front office staff in three schools replaced phrases like feminine hygiene with plain words like pads and periods. Staff practiced how to respond when a student whispered a request. They learned to avoid jokes and to keep tone matter of fact. In a second session, teachers learned to add one line to their class norms. Students could step out to manage health needs without debate. The line did not name menstruation directly. Students felt the shift anyway. A parallel fix arrived in housing. The city updated shelter guidelines to require stall bins with lids and a supply drawer at the desk. The change was small. The effect was large. Lila, the night shift worker from earlier months, picked up a kit that included two pad sizes. A staff member pointed to the drawer and said it would stay stocked. Lila walked to work that evening without three layers of underwear and without the careful gait that had made her late on heavy days. By August, Riverside Primary's dashboard showed steady service. Bin pickups occurred twice a day. Dispensers were refilled three times a week. Water uptime rose after a valve replacement and a maintenance contract change. Door locks were swapped for sturdier models that could be fixed with parts on hand. The nurse logged fewer urgent requests that pulled students out of class for long stretches. Ms. Ellis stopped paying for supplies out of her own pocket. She still kept a spare packet in her drawer out of habit. It stayed unopened for 2 weeks at a time. The evaluation report arrived on a Monday afternoon. It found that schools with stall bins, stocked dispensers, and reliable water saw a drop in absence variance for the targeted grades. It found that nurse visits for headaches declined, which nurses said were often code for cramps and leaks. It found that simple language guides reduced student embarrassment in office interactions. It listed common errors and fast fixes. It recommended district-wide rollout with a check sheet and a public page that listed progress site by site. The board accepted the report and posted the check sheet online. Parents could see whether a school had bins, stock, locks, and water. They could see the service schedule and the person responsible. The factory adopted a similar check. A laminated card appeared inside each stall. It listed a number to text if a bin was missing or full. It listed the day and time for service. The plant manager met with line leads and asked for feedback. Kira and Alina said the changes helped. They asked for one more step: stock a small supply at the clinic room for emergencies. The manager agreed and added a supply drawer by the nurse's desk. The nurse asked for neutral language in the policy. The revised document named pads and disposal. It also reminded supervisors that bathroom breaks include time for menstrual care. The camp's progress held. Lights stayed on along the path. Bins and stalls were serviced daily. The team still lacked enough safe water to recommend cups. They kept the plan simple. They tracked stock. They trained new staff each month. They consulted with women's groups on placement and privacy. They asked for water funding at every coordination call. They received a commitment to add a second water truck on 2 days each week. It was not a full fix. It was a step. The investigative question that opened this series asked why basic menstrual needs remained unmet when the need was known. The reporting turned up three answers and one condition that cut across them. The answers were supply, infrastructure, and culture. The condition was accountability. Supply moved when budgets named it and contracts spread risk. Infrastructure moved when bins, locks, and water were placed on the same dashboards as other basics and when service was part of someone's paid job. Culture moved when leaders used plain words, when staff learned neutral scripts, and when students and workers saw their needs met without debate. Accountability held the three together. It took the form of public checklists, service logs, and a phone number to call when a bin was missing. It took the form of a board vote that set a standard and a calendar that measured delivery. It took the form of an amendment to a janitorial contract that paid for the minutes required to lift a lid and change a liner. Not every site will move at the same speed. Some will face water limits that make product choice complex. Some will face small rooms that demand careful placement. Some will face budgets that require phased rollout. The template remains clear. Start with stall bins with lids. Stock pads that match user preference. Fix locks. Raise water uptime. Put service in writing and fund the time. Teach staff to speak plainly. Publish progress. Invite feedback. Adjust. At 4:58 p.m., September 2, 2025, Ms. Ellis locked her classroom and stepped into the hall. She passed the restroom and saw a student wash her hands and check her skirt with a calm glance. The student walked out without a sweater tied at her waist. In the nurse's office, the dispenser log showed a refill at midday. The numbers were simple. The change they marked was not small. A. collected her backpack and joined her friends at the gate. She did not count the hours anymore. She thought about a science quiz on Friday and a weekend plan to visit her cousin. Small plans returned when the month's first week did not force hard choices. Lila walked to her shift with a kit that would last until payday. Kira and Alina punched in without the extra stop and plan that had shaped their breaks. What remains unsolved is not hard to name. Some schools still lack water every day. Some shelters still rely on donations that arrive late or off target. Some meetings still slip past the word period and say facilities in a way that hides the need. The distance between a policy and a door that locks can be measured in days and invoices. The distance between a bin on paper and a bin that is emptied can be measured in job descriptions. Verified takeaway. Where pads are stocked, bins with lids sit inside stalls, locks work, water is reliable, and service is written into contracts, absentee gaps narrow and reported anxiety falls. The steps are ordinary. The effect is dignity measured in minutes reclaimed.